Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. I am back. I greatly appreciate the support that I had both from two incredible hosts. Matt Neely took the first week of my absence and hit it out of the ballpark. And then Ben Bueller Garcia, in the only way BBG can do anything, was just a fantastic, not only host interacting with a pretty strong lineup of guests, but also his ability to give some input into it. But Matt, I really wanted to thank you again, because what I like about it is your embrace is when I ask you if you want to be a host, you say yes, and you want to take the show. It's your guest. You fire it up. You find them. We talk about it, but it's I love the ability that I can turn the show over to you, I don't have to worry about it.
Thanks, Ted. Had a good time. And as always, it's just a pleasure to work with Ben. So we tag teamed it, got it done for you. So we had a great time. And I hope you had a great time on your sojourn, on your vacation.
I did. It was really unique listening to The Morning Voice from Germany and Europe. A shameless plug, a free plug, I guess, for Ryan Hansen and the folks at Bon Voyage Travel. They're the ones that Katie and I have used to help set us up before. And it's the first time we ever did a river cruise. We took her father and his wife, and which they'd never ever been in Europe. I lived there for a couple of years in the military, and it had other opportunities to go over there. They had never been, so it was everything for them was new, from crossing the ocean to trying to adjust to that pain of a 16-hour flight.
Yeah.
And make it through. And we did a little time in Germany before we got on the cruise. We went to Dachau. That's always a somber reminder. And it was interesting, even on the cruise, to hear the Germans still talk about, never again. I mean, it's, they do, I won't say they embrace that. They just recognize it's part of their history. And it's much like in our country, there's parts of our history we would rather probably ignore, but we have to embrace it. And it's the only way you're ever going to move forward. But it was a great experience. The river cruise, if anybody has cruised before, a river cruise is a whole different thing. 182 guests on the boat. Most of the cruising's at night. You really spend a lot of time getting off the boat and seeing the country and getting out to it. And there's a lot of things that I liked about Germany that I remembered that I'd seen. And we spent one day in Strasbourg, France, and we spent a couple days in Switzerland. It was, but you know what? There's still not a better country than this country right here. It's just a different perspective. And I think, we don't always realize what we've got in this country. It's incredibly rich with history over in Europe. I mean, it makes us look like we still are a new nation, which we are, 250 years. I mean, when you're looking at castles that are dating from, the single-digit centuries of the world and everything, and look at the towns, but then I look at how far we've come in just over 200 years. Yep. 250. And congratulations to the U.S. Army celebrating 250 years this year. They were one of the first out the chute. They remind us all the time that the Air Force is the baby service, but now we've got the Space Force, so we can say, we're not the baby service anymore.
Right.
Exactly. So we were just smart enough to break away from the Army and become
that's right,
and become the U.S. Air Force. but it was a great experience, and I'd strongly recommend it. Towns were beautiful. They were well kept.
Mm-hmm.
Saw very few homeless. Actually saw very few gypsies, which is something I remember from living in the 90s.
Oh, really?
In that part of the world, you saw it more. You saw it a lot in France. You see it in the bigger cities. And we did hit Cologne and a couple, Lucerne and a couple big, large cities throughout. But they were all clean. They were all tidy. Incredible rail system. Even the public transit system's good. But then when you check out of a grocery store or pay the bill at a restaurant, you see that 19%+ taxes through all that area too. So it's kind of a different government, a different way of life. I prefer what we have in America, and I'm really looking forward to the guests we have on this morning.
Yeah, that'll fit right in
to talk about it, because their book, What's Right with America and How We Can Keep It That Way. I've made my
way. Thank you for my copy.
You bet. I think you'll enjoy it. I opened it up with open eyes. I have a lot of respect both for Paul Johnson and Larry Aldrich, who will be our guests this morning after this opening break, and we'll move on there. So 100 degrees, you got the worst of it while we were over there, it sounds like. We came back on the weekend.
Oh, yeah, the worst of it's over, Ted. Yeah, it's all downhill from here.
From here? We've got no more worries?
It's not going to be 113 on Thursday. That's just a state of mind.
Well, it's
You came home just... We thought you'd missed it, but the heat wave, it's back for another week.
Well, I'm hoping we will see those... I've been hearing some reports that maybe the formation of the weather systems are looking for a good, strong monsoon.
So right here on The Morning Voice, Dr. Ed Ackerley had a gal named Kai from the National Weather Service. And we posed the question to her, what are you seeing with the monsoon developing? And she says that their models and forecasts say that we should have a good monsoon this year.
Well, look at the Morning Voice, the breaking news for weather and the future of what our summer is going to look like. One thing I did want to share with you, Matt, on the trip is the first day we got on the riverboat, because we did about 4 days in front of it. Then we got on the riverboat. We walk in. It was the first day, opening day of the Super Regionals. Of the Super Regionals for the University of Arizona baseball team, which has had just an incredible year.
Good year, sure.
And the first day of the Super Regionals, we walk in. I had some U of A swag on. Right. And we go to the lounge, because that's, when you get on a cruise, one of the first places you want to check out is the lounge.
Of course.
And we go to the lounge, and there are three couples sitting there, decked out in powder blue and UNC. Hey.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. In powder blue and UNC.
Oh, no. I thought you were going to say you ran into some Wildcats. No.
No. Katie and I and her parents embraced it because they've become big Wildcat fans. We were kind of on our own. And the best part was these couples, at least two of them, like to talk a lot of smack.
Okay.
We learned pretty quick. The third one was actually an East Carolina graduate.
Okay.
The two who were dentists. All in their late 60s, early 70s. They had been dentists, one served in the Navy, which was a great conversation point over the weekend for us. But yeah, they like to talk a lot. And I think, as you remember, that first game, how'd that turn out for the Cats?
And you got walloped.
18-2.
You got walloped.
It was absolutely painful.
Yeah.
Now, Katie, being the internal optimist, went up to him and said, "Hey, we just want to ensure there's a game three."
We're just doing this to help your coffers.
And all we can say is that the next two games.
We're generous like that.
Yeah. The next two games were a lot of fun.
Yeah. Right.
And so it all worked out. They were great people. And I think that was one of the things about these kind of trips is there's only 180 people on the boat. You meet most everybody. Might say we were a little younger on the level. But it was a great experience, and I'd strongly encourage anybody who has not yet consider doing that if you have the opportunity, whether it's stateside, because Vikings got cruises up and down the Mississippi. There's a lot of different ways to do it. It's a good, relaxing way to kind of disconnect and reset and see some things that you haven't. So whether, like I said, whether you're interested in doing it inside the States, Mississippi's got a bunch of them. You multiple choices throughout the world.
Oh, sure.
There's a lot of opportunities to go out there and do that. And either way, the summertime is a great place, great time for everybody to kind of reset. It's always a stark reminder to me how much Tucson and this region changes during the summertime. And so to come back to it and see a little less traffic on the roads, a little more people staying in their houses, having to set a tea time at 6:20 Sunday morning to get out before you're dying and still dying. It's that time of the year, but we live here because we can be in flip-flops and shorts at Christmas time.
That's right.
Everything is a trade-off. So we've kind of already teased it, Matt. We should be getting joined here fairly shortly by
Mr. Aldrich is with us, and waiting on former Mayor Johnson.
Honorable Paul Johnson will call in with us, and when we come back from the break, we'll start talking about what's right with America and how we can keep it that way. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Welcome back, Ted.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely, as usual, except when I'm not in town, is on the other side of the glass, keeping me on time and on target. The purpose of the Engagement Hour is to encourage everyone to get involved. We have rights and responsibilities. As a nation, we are bound by the shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality, and with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country, and to other, service to our community. And we are very honored to be joined by two gentlemen who have a long history of service both to their communities and to the country. With us right now is the Honorable Paul Johnson. I'll get a little bit more into his background in a second. And Mr. Larry Aldridge, a gentleman I've worked with for quite a bit of time. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Ted.
Yeah, thank you, Ted. And listening to the commercials, I miss Tucson very greatly.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. There's always more room down here. Remember, however hot it is in Phoenix, although I think you're in Durango, Colorado right now, so it's not going to get that hot. It's always a few degrees cooler down here in Tucson. We can never forget that. So both of you have incredible careers, and I like to, Paul, you've had a long history with serving the State Department, others. You've had a lot of exposure to other countries throughout the world, how things are done there on this. And then in 1990, Paul Johnson was elected as mayor of Phoenix, Arizona, where he served until 1994. You've remained just as involved since your service as mayor. You're incredibly engaged. And I'd like you to start telling the radio, telling a little of your stories. What was it that led you to be this engaged?
Oh, gosh. I grew up in a little place called Sunny Slope, Arizona. It's like the second highest poverty pocket in the state. My mom was a waitress. My dad was a construction worker. And I was kind of blessed to be able to grow up and become, I ran for city council when I was like 24 or 25, and I became mayor when I was 29 or 30. I usually have to ask for forgiveness for that when I go down to Tucson, but nonetheless, it was a fun thing. I enjoyed doing it greatly. You know, the thing that has worried me increasingly has been, I've certainly been concerned about what's happening with the two political parties and the dominance that seems to happen inside the partisan primary. So I've been very engaged in open primaries. I've been very engaged in the business community and trying to help candidates on both sides. I was a Democratic mayor, but I'm an independent today. I think when Larry and I wrote this book, the thing that was kind of overpowering to me anyway was the amount of pessimism that really existed on both sides. You know, we all know Trump's latest comments on the tariffs when he talks about how American industry has been hollowed out and our jobs have been robbed and they've all disappeared. Well, that's not far from the same speech that an AOC would give or Bernie Sanders. Just Bernie Sanders would blame the rich, and Donald Trump and his group sometimes blame the global elite. My own personal opinion, and I think what we tried to prove in this book, is that's just not what the data says. The data says something very different. In fact, the data says there's nothing like the United States of America. What we've been able to accomplish here, we've done more to promote human progress than any other nation in the history of the planet, bar none. So when you think about where we are in the U.S., you almost got to start by comparing it, like compare it to another country, or compare it, for that matter, to another era when maybe it may have been better. One of the comparisons that we gave is that in the 1990s, the United States was about the same on a GDP per person of all the other G7 nations. Today, we're double. And in fact, if you look at even Mississippi, that's like $53,000, I forget, $680-some per person. Mississippi, which is the lowest state in the country on GDP per person, is higher than any other G7 nation with the exception of Germany and Canada. There's nothing like where we are. And so we think that you have to start with the premise of how did we get here? What caused this prosperity? And Larry and I worked for a while trying to identify exactly what that thesis is. I'll let Larry tell it to you because he does a better job of it. But nonetheless, that was the starting point for the book.
Thank you, Mayor. And now, Larry Aldridge, I need to make sure I give you an introduction as well. I got the opportunity to meet you when I joined SLC in 2013. You are one of the co-founders, the seven original founders, and you had chaired SLC before I got there. But I got to talk with you a lot about your passion for for making things better. You were a CEO, you were an antitrust prosecutor, company lawyer for Gannett. You ran both the Star, the Citizen. You've got deep legs into healthcare, and United Physicians Healthcare, is you were CEO there as well. But Larry, what was it that built you to also, much like Mayor Johnson, have this desire to get engaged and get involved and make your community better?
Thanks, Ted. And throw a compliment to you. You've done a great job as CEO of Southern Arizona Leadership Council, which is really one of the proudest things I was ever to be a part of because of the impact it continues to have on the greater Tucson and community and on the state. So, and I'll also give a shout out to my employer, Gannett, who brought me to Tucson to run the newspapers in Tucson. And I got in Tucson, and hot or not, the sun shined every day. I said, I ain't going back. And so I never have left the state of Arizona. I think, having started as an attorney with a prosecutor with the Justice Department and really understanding as representing the United States, we represented the people of the United States. And that coupled with joining a newspaper company and understanding the important role that newspapers, media play in keeping America free and providing the right check and the right analysis of what's happening in government. I think those two issues kind of docked in my brain to say, you know, it's pretty important what America is, what it's become, and what it's becoming. And I pretty much, as part of the responsibility, the newspapers had to be engaged in the community, and enjoyed being engaged in the community, and even more so when I joined UPH. So I got together with Paul. No, knew Paul before I came up to the Phoenix area. He can talk a little bit in a bit about his podcast, The Optimistic American, which he'd been doing for a number of years. So impressive at a time that everybody's gloom and doom, woe is me, what's wrong with America? And he was putting this podcast on that talked about what's right with America. You know, and one day I sat down with him and I said, I think you need to write a book. And Paul said, well, I've written a book. And I said, well, I think you need a book around the podcast. And he goes, well, I'd like to do that, provided, you know, you'll write it with me. And I said, well, of course. And I think, Paul, I think what you said was, when I say you'll write it with me, you'll write it with me. And so I said, yeah, I'll sign up for that. And, we'll talk a little bit about where our focus is. But, you know, clearly, as we both connected on these issues, we said, you know, what makes America great? It is the focus on the individual talents of all Americans. And the Constitution of the United States, again, being a lawyer, very much a constitutional amateur expert, but believing I was an expert, was a focus on the power of the individual, a focus on the rights, responsibility, freedoms, and protection of individuals when they were in minority status, whatever that was. That power was pretty unique in history, if not unique in history, and really made America what it is and what it's becoming even more so. So, you know, with that focus, we kind of came together and brought this book out.
Well, I want to read a segment that was what I'd call the hook. And it's not necessarily the beginning, but it's the part that I knew I needed to keep reading this book when I read this. So many, you both wrote, and by the way, their ability to write as a pair in the book was remarkable. That's not easy to do. But it was, you had a little of your own personal touch, but you demonstrated your agreement on so many of these issues. But what you wrote was, many people think we are forever divided in our views, especially politically. This book discusses why Americans are less divided than they seem. Others suggest Americans no longer move towards that more perfect union. They're wrong. Some think America's successes are mainly in the rearview mirror, and countries like China, India, and even Russia seem to be rising as America falters. That, too, is false. Others worries that our standard of living is falling and that future generations will do less than past ones have or will. Wrong. Your ability to make those statements early in the book said, I'm not a reader, full disclosure, and I've gotten through, I've read the entire book, and I really... That was what caught me. What putting that up front, what was your thought behind it? And I've heard a little of that passion already.
You know, the first, I need to say this. Larry, he's right. I said that you write this with me. Larry's a beautiful writer, and he was fun to work with on this. There were areas where we would find disagreement, but we were always able to come back to the central thesis. There are lots of people who have theories about why the United States ended up so great. Certainly in geography, we have an Atlantic Ocean on one side, Pacific on the other. We have Canada and Mexico as our borders. That is so much better than most other places in the world. And we have these great navigable rivers, and we have all these wonderful resources and a large country that can trade with itself. But of all the great things that the United States did, whether it was building bridges or roadways, even putting somebody on the moon, the single greatest thing our country ever did from the very beginning was it empowered the individual over itself. And you cannot overstate that. It's so important to the process that we took those magical gifts that each one of us have inside and we empower them. And year after year, we empowered them even more so. You know, civil rights, equal rights, human rights, but as well as that, property rights, free markets, free enterprise, free trade, free elections, all those things are centered around the individual. And every time we did them, we created more buyers and more sellers, bigger markets. All of them were incredibly powerful, and we can watch them today. We can watch them, when Larry and I, we started the book with this story of what happened with Apollo landing on the moon, and we were both young people enthralled by it. It was like the center news.
Mayor, I hate to do this, but we're going to have to cut you off. That's a tease. We'll tell the rest of that story on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's with me behind the glass, and we are honored this morning to have former Phoenix Mayor Paul Johnson and one of the founders of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, Larry Aldridge, but most importantly, the authors of a book called What's Right with America and How We Can Keep It That Way. I highly suggest after you listen, if this radio show intrigues you and these comments intrigue you, get on Amazon. It is open for order and you can get it delivered right to your front door if that's how you like to do things. So Mayor, sorry about having to cut you off then. That's the only hard break. I should have let you guys know that in advance a little bit more. That's the only hard break we have. So the next time we go to break, it will be at hopefully a much smoother transition. But if you'd like to continue the story you were telling about some of why you're really driving home the message of what we've done right in America.
Sure. So I think the thing that I would focus on is that if you take a look at the far right and the far left, and I'm talking beyond the people that you see as candidates, I'm talking about the people who are oftentimes behind the candidates, the people who are promoting the extremism on the far right and the far left, you will begin to see similarities between them. The example that to me is so glaring is that you'll see on the far right oftentimes signs that say the white genocide. What are they doing? They're putting people into a group. They're identifying people by the group that they're in. And then you'll see the far left signs about the white patriarchy, right? Or white privilege. It's the same thing. They're identifying people by the group that they're in, as opposed to identifying people as individuals. The whole comments of Martin Luther King that we should know people by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin, it's overused. It sometimes it seems trite, but the reality is that is maybe the single most powerful concept that we have, and it's the unifying concept. It's the concept where people on the right and the left can agree.
So, Larry, what would you add to that thought? Because that is one of the major premises that I think throughout this book is the individual freedom and opportunity versus the economic equality, or where government changes when they start thinking about doing what's best for the whole versus best for the continuation of a country's flourishing.
I'm going to just build a little bit on what Paul just said. We are now being told by the extreme right and extreme left that we have to choose. between one or the other. And what we try to do in this book is say there's at least a third path, the path we believe, and it's a path that's, you know, I would say rooted in truth and framed by hope and optimism. And we don't have to choose those extreme views because that's not what America is. So as we look at the individual power, and the founders were remarkable people. You know, I can't say they had an amazing foresight, but they had amazing foresight. They really probably never envisioned what America has become, but they laid in place the foundation to have what we have today. So, you know, we've been told currently that America's best days are in the past. You know, make America great again. Let's go back to the 50s or 60s. Let's rip out the Constitution and start all over Chris Laud. America's best days are ahead, and it is that power of the individual. The founders really said, you individuals have a right to practice a religion as you choose. You are free to marry who you want to marry. You are free to go into whatever occupation you choose. In many cases in America, you're also free to fail. And one of the great things that the Constitution reflects is that people get to start over. We actually specifically put bankruptcy in the Constitution as a right to start over. Those were all incredible visions that developed into what the country has become over the last 250 years. So in addition to the individual, you know, we identified five traits that surround that. And those five traits are confidence. You know, Americans have confidence that they can solve problems they need to solve. Innovation. I was asked on a podcast, wasn't the height of our innovation 1969 when we landed on the moon, as we articulated in our book? No, seeing Elon Musk's SpaceX be captured by those chopsticks was an amazing innovation and part of imagination. So confidence, innovation, grit, you know, just putting your hands together and digging in and getting things done. Generosity, Paul mentioned that earlier. You know, we are just a generous people. We help each other and we help others around the world. And then ultimately, optimism. We have to approach problem solving with optimism. We don't solve any problems by being fearful and pessimistic. So one of the key things in our book is while we have optimism, we're not delusional. We understand we have some serious problems. So we have our eyes wide open. And we can look at those problems and then go, now how do we solve them? So those are what we identified as the five key traits of a successful America.
Go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to add to that. There are a lot of things in the book that were fun writing. We talked about the founders. We spent time on the philosophers. We also spent time on the far right and the far left and kind of the philosophical roots of them, which interestingly enough weave together often in history. But to me, the most important part of the book is really it's not just designed around talking to you about our country. It's designed to talk to you about the importance of your self-agency. If you know this whole idea of the amygdala hijack, all of the rational thought that we have come from the neocortex. It's where optimism exists, love exists, the ability to think rationally comes from that small little gray matter on the frontal portion of our brain. But it can be overpowered by the amygdala, which is a much more primitive part of the brain that can overpower it chemically. And then the only thing you can do is think of fight, flight, or freeze. Politicians and the news media and others, they recognize that. In fact, in politics, I've had amazing people at a national level. I've worked in multiple presidential campaigns who've talked about this concept. But if I know who you are ideologically on the right or the left, I know there are buttons I can push. And if I push those buttons, I can terrify you. And once I terrify you, the amygdala kicks in and you can't think rationally. So you don't act, right? You pull back. You begin to make decisions for all the wrong reasons. Well, if you're going to be in business or if you're going to think about how to promote your career, how to help your children, that optimism becomes important because it's a part of self-agency. Now, when what we do, and here's where we slide into the trap. So we're, you know, and we're either on the right or the left, we're either a Democrat or we're a Republican. And in the beginning, we have these people on the extreme edges of our parties who are saying things that we don't agree with. Well, that creates a cognitive dissonance in your mind, meaning morally you know that it's wrong, but they're in your tribe. And so you start to defend them. And after a while, they start to say things that are so non-defendable that the best you can do is say, well, my side, what about your side? Look at how bad it is. And all of a sudden, you're being sucked into that vortex on either side. Agency is clearly one of the most important things. And that means that you look at ideology and you say, hey, ideologically, what ideology does is it allows you to remove, all of us have good and evil inside of us, or at least the propensity to do good and evil inside of us. But once we adapt into a party, we say, well, wait a minute, that party's evil, that group is evil, my group is good. And so you externalize the evil and begin to objectify the other side. You quit seeing them as human beings. You quit seeing them as people. You quit treating them as brothers or sisters or people that we love. If you want to be patriotic, start with this. Quit insulting other Americans. There's a good starting spot. And second, gain agency over yourself and recognize it's very, very profitable to terrify you.
Yeah, I fully agree with those concepts. I thought what the book did incredibly well, and maybe I enjoyed the history piece of it, is to set that structure up. You threw the explanation, great conversation on the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and you spent a lot of time on the Bill of Rights and the fundamentalism and laid out what gives everyone that individual opportunity here. What you just spoke about there is one, yes, we've got to start realizing it as humans, you know, get our own personal agency in place and our understanding and realize that we're falling prey to this. But so often now you hear, well, what I'm doing is not as bad as what they're doing. And it's, we're justifying limiting, I think, that individualism, limiting that individual freedom and opportunity in the name of, well, if we go to either one of those extremes, we're not taking the country in the way it's intended to by the founders when you look at how they set everything up.
No, go ahead, Larry.
All I was going to turn that to Ted and Paul was the notion that we have to be so focused on the structure that is in the Constitution. What the founders did, in addition to focusing on our freedoms, they created the government structure to make it all work. And a big part of that government structure is a separation of powers. I'll misquote John Adams in the Federalist Papers, but basically said, if men were angels, we would not need government. But they ain't angels. And we have to give them government to kind of keep them in check, the rule of law. And then we got to check government. So the founders created an interesting process among the three branches of government to make sure one didn't get out of balance with the other. And we can argue as to what's happening today or with prior or future administrations. But what they really put in the Constitution is what we call the scaffolding of democracy. And that's the rule of law. The rule of law is what makes things work in America. It's what makes things people comfortable in America and what make their freedoms and powers protected in America. When you're in the process of buying a home, you never have to think about many of the things others in other countries have to think about. We just kind of go through our day and we stop at Walmart or we drive down the street or we do whatever. We don't even think about that the rule of law kind of creates this scaffolding, this infrastructure that enables our freedoms to ring loudly. And sometimes we forget. We take that for granted. And so much of what we were trying to say in the book is, let's stop taking for granted all the tools that we have in place, because it is what enables us to be more and more successful.
The idea of a more perfect union is so important in this, right? So, you go back to the founding, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed upon by their creator with certain inalienable rights. That's not in the Constitution. That's in the Declaration of Independence. But the Constitution was based on that concept. And once that concept took hold in mankind, it changed everything. I mean, you start with looking at slavery, right? The slavery has been around on the planet since the beginning of mankind. It's, you know, the Egyptians had it. We can read that biblically. We know that it's been here, was here during the Roman era. The Vikings utilized it. But something somewhere along the line in history made it immoral. And I would argue that it's when we got to that concept that all men are created equal. Now, certainly it wasn't that way in 1776 amongst all men. But increasingly, once we bought into that idea, more people began to have those rights. More people began to participate. So before you throw out this concept of what we're based upon, you ought to think about many of the morals that we have today and where they come from, and also the great prosperity that it's created. You know, I see oftentimes an attack against these theories from either the right or the left. And on the left, oftentimes, while they may be supportive of civil rights, they're not supportive of property rights. They're not supportive of free markets and free enterprise. And those have played every bit as equal a role in promoting the individual and promoting our prosperity as have the civil rights and equal rights. And I would say the same to folks on the right. There's a unifying concept around the individual that if we can recognize what it really is, and then we can take part in it by having our own self-agency, we can allow our children to inherit something that is every bit as great or better than what we got.
And gentlemen, we're going to take... Go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to say just a quick point. Let me add to that. You know, the founders and the Constitution didn't promise perfection. We're on the path to a more perfect union. But what they promised was possibility, and we have exercised that possibility over the last 250 years.
And I think you guys did a great job in the book of outlining the compromise that was involved in the Declaration, but it still was based on all men are created equal. And yes, it took us over 100 plus years to get to the point where we as a nation engaged amongst ourselves in both combat and in politics. But it was that opening is what gave us the opportunity and continues to give the opportunity for everyone to have the keyword, the opportunity to succeed and to fail and to try again. So we're listening to Larry Aldrich, longtime Tucsonan, and Paul Johnson, the host of The Optimistic American, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back. This is The Morning Voice. We have as guests this morning, Paul Johnson, Larry Aldrich, the authors of What's Right with America and How We Can Keep It That Way. I know you can obtain the book on Amazon.com, but there's probably several other ways to do it, and I strongly suggest that you do that. Gentlemen, unfortunately, we've only got 3 minutes left. First off, I want to thank you for your dedications in the book. I'm just going to say they were both to two gentlemen I greatly respect, General Wesley Clark and Mr. James Jim Click, Jr. But what I want to give you is these last now 2.5 minutes to what haven't you said yet about the book you'd like to close with?
Harry, I'll let you go first.
Thank you. Well, I just think it's important to say to the audience, Ted, you know, this book is not about nostalgia. It's not about looking to the past. I only look to the past to admire what the founders created for America. This book is about the tools, what we need to do, the powers we need to continue to have. You know, just look at the issues around what's happening in the Middle East, and everyone's looking to America, either with optimism or fear, but we are the powerful nation in major part because of the tools the founders created for us. We should understand how important it is that the rule of law be honored and respected. We should understand checks and balances. We should encourage both houses in Congress to protect their houses and not let any administration run roughshod over them. We simply have just gotten away from that notion of working together and you know, power by executive order by a president is not what the founders had in mind. But the founders did have in mind, in my opinion, a strong executive, a strong president. But they also expected a strong Congress. So we underscore that Article 1 of the Constitution, number 1, is Congress. It's not the president. It's not the judiciary. So we would encourage everybody to encourage their elected officials, stay engaged, protect your powers under the Constitution. And with that, we can overcome any adversity that we face in the future, because we've done it in the past and we will do it again.
And Mayor Johnson, you've got 30 seconds.
I would just say, that in the United States, the single greatest thing, as I said earlier, was the private sector. It's the individual. It, you know, when you start thinking about how we're going to solve, cure cancer, extend human life, create driverless vehicles, get rid of DWIs, it's not going to be government that does those. It's going to be the private sector. And that's America's secret sauce. That's where we're strong.
Great closing, gentlemen. I appreciate the show. I'm going to pitch the book at the top of the hour. Thank you. Welcome back. You are listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, and I've got Matt Neely behind the glass. If you weren't with us the first hour, you missed a great interview with the Honorable Paul Johnson, former mayor of Phoenix, as well as Larry Aldridge, a longtime Tucsonan and one of the founders of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. They've written a new book. It's entitled What's Right with America and How We Can Keep It That Way. I'm just going to ask Matt real quick. What was your takeaway from the interview?
Well, I just like the way that they laid the foundation out that everybody says our best days are behind us, and they're not. And this is why, you know, the power of the individual. And I thought that exchange about halfway through the interview was just, they really set the table. So thank you for bringing attention to that quote. But I thought it was a really good discussion. I can't wait to read. Thank you for the copy. I also want to let the listeners know, if they'd like to see their voice this afternoon, this morning, they can follow along at 10:30, The Voice on Facebook. So we've got the show on, with you and Amanda,
yeah, you had it right.
For this hour.
For this hour. Yeah. You had it right, Matt. You're doing a great job leading us into the technological world of, having to look up and see my face or the side of my head while we're on the air. I think you're right. You hit a lot of what the book was about. I do think that history is going to be, you know, to both Paul and Larry, they're historians. They've known this stuff.
Yeah.
And this, they were folk. They do. The part of the book does definitely address how we as citizens can go forward. But I think for most of us, it's going to be that opening. It's going to be the part of, hey, here's how the founders created the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. You know, it, all men are created equal. Now, that was never stated. That was stated there. It was never stated in the Constitution,
right,
or the Bill of Rights, but everything behind it came from that. And there is a reason to this day. There's still more people that want to come live in this country.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And it's individualism and opportunity.
Right.
Everyone can succeed. And I thought, I mean, that's what it's about.
Well, and
it's the individual.
I don't want it to. You've got a great chat set up this hour, but just the fact that they reminded us the standard of living, even for a moderate income person, is way above
income.
We don't even know how good we have it, and that's why people are clamoring to get into America.
What we call the poverty level in the United States is higher than most average income or whatever the score, the measure of,
sure,
they are throughout the world. They, yeah, stated that. We forget that. But that being said, thank you for being the Matt Neely that keeps me on time, but more importantly, on target. And the target for this hour, I've with me today, I've got Amanda Wiggins, the president and CEO of the Marana Chamber of Commerce, and an incredible person, which I'm looking forward to talking to more about here. And we may even go a little bit down your family road, because your family is just amazing and continues to expand and grow. But this show, man, well, first off, welcome.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here, Tim.
And thanks for letting us rant a little bit on the earlier guest.
I was excited already looking at that on Places to Buy. So
outstanding. Yeah. It's a great book. Strongly encourage people to read it. There's something I think everybody can take from it. But Marana,
mm-hmm,
one of the fastest growing communities in this region. And in June of 2021, you packed up your family that we've talked about, which,
yeah,
now has
grown.
You've got some Arizona-born family members, and you moved to Marana. Mm-hmm. This show is about getting people engaged. You've been engaged throughout your professional career. Mm-hmm. What was it that led you down that path and got you engaged in serving through the kind of the business focus and the community focus?
Yeah. So I would really say that it starts back to my childhood. And it's really funny being in Marana now. There's so many things I want to, directions I want to go with this, Ted. But I would say probably the most impactful component was my middle school years and being involved in FFA. And so it's funny because that's such a big thing in Marana, for the 4-H programs, the FFA programs. But I truly think that is where so many great leaders start. There's the agriculture component, raising something that, you know, keeping something alive, going through the process, learning about taking it to market, to sell, to reach out to buyers of your product, right? And then what I got to do in elementary or middle school was I got to be an officer in the FFA. So kind of learned about some of the Robert's Rules of Order, learning about how to conduct a meeting, learning about some of that. So I would say that when you kind of told me what we were going to talk about, I immediately went back to that. So my middle school agriculture days and leadership programs through FFA.
Oh, that's incredible, because that's not what I would have guessed. I mean, that may be, but you're right. It goes back to, almost everybody goes back to how they were raised.
Yeah.
Or things they were involved in.
And opportunities that they had as a child. Yeah.
To me, sports, mm-hmm. I've always looked at sports that way. It's an opportunity for leadership. It's all opportunity to learn as a part, being part of a team. And you're still an individual.
Yeah.
And so you have to
absolutely.
Do that. So that's great. And that growing up was in Florida.
Yeah, correct? So I grew up in Central Florida, Denali, Florida.
Agriculture in Florida. Who'd have thunk?
There's quite a bit, right?
Citrus, come on.
Yeah,
citrus.
There's a lot. So, Central Florida. So I grew up there and was in a pretty small community. Even smaller than Marana was, a few years ago. So around probably 10,000 people in my hometown, and, you know, unincorporated, it gets a little bit bigger. But I went up to Tallahassee after high school to finish a degree in public relations at the Florida State University. So my husband and I grew up in the same small town. We went up there together, kind of that story. Then he was finishing his degree in electrical engineering, and I was a year ahead, so I needed to find work in Tallahassee. And I had been interning through a PR firm that had connected me with the chamber there. And so it was a really great transition from graduating with my degree from Florida State and then starting to work at the Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce. And what I specifically did there was program director for Leadership Tallahassee. So the way our program and community was modeled was our chamber had, it was the umbrella organization for our Leadership Tallahassee program. We were our own 501c6, or actually c3, under the chamber. But so we had an executive director, and I was the program director there. So did that after my husband, he wasn't my husband at the time, but was graduating. His degree was really going to take him to Orlando, Florida, right? The big city for what he was doing. I loved our community so much in Tallahassee that we really, and he loved it as well, that we decided not to leave. And so he was able to work for the same company, but in a little bit different of a job, and a little bit more kind of remotely from the team. And so we asked, and they granted that for us. So we stayed in Tallahassee for about 8 years total, working with Leadership Tallahassee. My husband worked for a large utility company. He was kind of going through figuring out what he wanted to do, work for a big company, work for a small company, kind of figuring out that path for him. Meanwhile, I loved my job. I still do. I working for Leadership Tallahassee is one of my greatest things I've ever gotten to do. And the people I worked with, I just really loved it. We actually moved out here in December 2020. And so it was for my husband's job.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's yes. another new twist.
Yeah.
I was going to ask how you got your husband to move all the way to Arizona.
Yeah, no, we moved for his job. So December 2020. So we stayed in Tallahassee for my job for so many years, and he really wanted to, you know, be professionally fulfilled. So we made that leap. At that time, we had a 2.5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
After kind of the craziness of 2020, we were like, why not? Let's do this. We had already made a big move from our small town 3 hours away. Why not just go the whole 2,000 miles, right? So came out here. right before we fully moved, you know, needed to make the decision and drive around and stuff. And so I was looking at a lot of factors from housing availability to, you know, what we could afford. And then the school district was a big component of where we were going to go. And so looking at everything, we chose Marana to live. And that was just such an awesome decision now, but I didn't work here before I lived here. I lived there first. And so I'd reached out to all the chamber presidents when I moved and said, I love this work. I got to do this. And I'd love the opportunity to do this for your organization or anything that, I just love community work. So I've always, you know, I had 6 months that I was staying with our, 2.5-year-old and I was so ready to, get back to doing what I loved. But at that time, December 2020, you can imagine chambers weren't growing, right? They were really doing the opposite. So I had great conversations with some of the local leaders, but they didn't have an opportunity for me. And then a couple weeks after, Audra, the president and CEO of the Marana Chamber, had reached out to me and said, hey, I got your resume. I'm actually leaving and going back to my hometown if you want to try for this job. And, you know, I told you I was a program director under an executive director under a CEO, right? I wasn't in that leadership role in Tallahassee in that capacity. But I think a couple, you know, things in my mind right now, I said yes, because I would love to, right? Sure, I'll give it a try. And also, what better way to get out of this house with a 2.5-year-old than have an interview with a board of directors for a chamber, right? I knew I just have about 20 people I need to convince to hire me for their own businesses, you know, because there's no way I'm going to get this job. And then once I got in that seat and went through those interviews, I was so comfortable. I had my experience from Tallahassee going through working as, you know, a young professional in a leadership program was the best foundation you can have, right? I essentially went through 8 years of a leadership program in my community. And what I've learned is, you know, these communities, the parts and pieces look the same. It's different who's in them, who's leading those components, right? So I went through that. So June 21 is when I started working with Marana Chamber of Commerce.
So you went to interview with 20 businesses hoping to get a job with one of them.
Correct.
And they all decided, oh no, we've got the job for you.
Yes.
And I will tell you, Amanda, you were incredibly engaged from the start. That's the one thing I noticed the first time I met you, is you were all in on Marana.
Yeah.
And you had that focus and you had that understanding. Now, did the Marana Chamber, when you arrived, have anything like Tallahassee's program?
You know, it there's a lot of things about the Marana Chamber of Commerce that to me didn't exactly look like it did in Tallahassee. And I've tried to do this as I have grown in my personal and professional life. When you come from somewhere, so you always remember the best of, right? And then you come to this new place and you're like, but you're not like my old spot I was. Here's, you know, what they did. But we forget about all the not so great things about where we came from as well, right? Because we all have that. And so I did. It was interesting to me to look back now 4 years later and think, I really had some preconceived ideas about things that I thought were kind of, oh, I can't wait to bring this chamber, you know, forward in these ways. But then there's so much about where the Marana Chamber was and still is that it's like, that's what makes it so unique and special that I'm glad I didn't. I might have had that in my head, but I didn't do away with it. So an example of that, one of the questions in my interview was, you know, do you have a hook that you can pull people? We give everybody 30 seconds to speak at our Marana Mornings event. Do you have a hook when people go over that they, you know, kind of a joke about, you know, can I drop them through the floor? Or, you know, these magic powers of getting people to use their time and not go over. And I thought, oh my gosh, everyone gets 30 seconds to speak. I was like, oh gosh, that's going to be, I can't
that,
even imagine.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It sounds like a nightmare. And nothing in Tallahassee was like that. No one had that opportunity. And so I thought, you know, that'll be the first thing to go. But I sat through a few and I thought, this is magic. You can hear 30 seconds from all of these people. There's no better way to network and to understand people's stories than to listen to them. And what I love about that is a lot of networking events, you just go into a room and what happens is the people who are most comfortable make the best connections because they're most comfortable moving around the room, getting, you know, the people who aren't, and you don't have to be great at networking to be a great business person and to, you know, have a great product or something that, you know, you want to share with people. And so what I saw is that you listen to everyone for 30 seconds. The magic happens after that meeting. And you can say, I've got five people I need to go talk to right now. And I know I'm going to have a meaningful conversation. So all that to say was, yes, there was differences. And 4 years ago, I thought, I can't wait to make Marana like Tallahassee. And now what I've just loved is just letting Marana Chamber of Commerce grow and, you know, do things that I think and my team think it needs to enhance what it's doing, but to really honor the past and legacy.
Well, you're definitely making a mark out there, and we're going to take a break now. But when we come back, let's talk about something that you kind of did bring with you or you've developed since you got here, and that's Impact Marana.
I'd love to.
That's the voice of Amanda Wiggins, the president and CEO of the Marana Chamber of Commerce. And you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, and that's Matt Neely behind the glass. You can blame him for reminding us that it's going to be 113 on Thursday. Really?
I'm only the messenger.
I know. We don't shoot the messenger. It's all good. My guest is Amanda Wiggins, the president and CEO of the Marana Chamber of Commerce. If her enthusiasm isn't oozing through the radio, it's one of the things I really appreciate about you is you are definitely fired up both about Marana, the opportunities, and you love what you do. Mm-hmm. You demonstrate that with your conversation about Tallahassee Leadership, a leadership mm-hmm. program for the next generation of leaders. And you're part of that next generation of leaders. There's some of us that are part of the old generation. And you felt it was very important to bring something similar to that. So can you tell me about what Impact Marana is? As I understand, you're in year three.
Yes, we're recruiting for year three right now. I'd be delighted to tell you about Impact Marana. So, you know, it's no secret. Marana is fast growing, is a huge component of this Southern Arizona puzzle, huge component of Arizona in general. The growth we've seen has been exponential. I, you know, chose it as the community for my family to live in, and have just seen that so much with so many other families. One of the things I said earlier was about how people bring, you know, the best of their old communities. And that's what I see in Marana, which is really unique. You know, there's a lot of transplants. There's so many people who have legacy and family and history in that community. But a lot of that growth is people coming from other places. And I love that because when you bring the best of what you know, it makes the community you're going to better. And that's what we got to do with Impact Marana. And so it is a community leadership program. I saw this growth and I thought, wow, if all the community leaders are not connected, this growth isn't going to be as impactful, meaningful, sustainable as it could be. So I thought, Impact Marana, there needs to be a program that exists that allows leaders in our community to connect and understand other sectors that they are not working in. And so what we did, I brought this to the board of directors. Fortunately, one of my directors, who is Dr. Dan Streeter, who's a superintendent of the Marana Unified School District.
A great superintendent.
He absolutely is.
And a pretty
is.
Good golfer too, don't tell him.
Okay. He had gone through a program like this as well in his previous community. And he said, 100%, Amanda, what do you need? We need to make this happen. So we worked to develop the foundation and launched Impact Marana about 3 years ago. The first class, I had to, you know, promise people it was going to be wonderful. And so I got 25 participants in that, from superintendent of school to our town manager to fire department leadership to business ownership, you know, construction companies, goods, retail, everything represented in that first class. It was really that all-star class, and I loved having that. And just huge success. What it looks like is 7 months, one day a month, you learn about a different sector of the community. So we have public safety, we have education and workforce, we have healthcare, we have Economic Development Day, which you've gotten to speak at in a hangar out at the Marana Regional Airport, right?
Yeah, that was pretty cool, actually.
Right? Yeah, so that's been really awesome. What a backdrop. We've had our Agriculture Agritourism Day, which is something I didn't get in Tallahassee, which I get in Marana, and that's one of the best days, you know. Environment resiliency, different components like that that make up the day. So it's 7 months, one day a month. It's a full day. You're bussed around, moved around. Like you said, that was a pretty cool setting to learn about economic development and to hear from some of those regional leaders, and that's what it's about. It's not sitting in a room just taking in information. It's experiential learning. And so after that completion, not only do the connections in the class, you know, make so much impact, it's the content through the day that really allows, you know, these leaders to.
So in that first class, you identified kind of a superstar. I mean, it's a great thing. Show all of these people have been through it. So everybody goes, wow, I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
The second class, to me, it's probably the one that's more important, because now you have people establishing connections with people they may not already know. In that superstar class, most of them probably already knew each other. They didn't know all the information you taught them.
Exactly.
But in the second class, now you're making the connections.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I saw that a lot where, you know, it's like, oh, we know about this, but they didn't really know about it. You know, when you're dedicating one day a month for 7 months, that is not a 1 hour meeting you had, you know, with that other person that you might have known or learned about that. That is something very different. And that's what we saw out of it. When you have your town manager who knows, who formerly was your chief of police, right? That is a special sauce that doesn't happen all the time. And you want to talk about somebody who knows the community inside out, upside down, and everything. To have him speak so highly about the program, to share he had new experiences, he learned, you know, more about people that he's leading alongside, that's how I knew that this was going to be a success. So that second class, less convincing, a lot more, you know, connections and magic that happened there. We're recruiting right now through the end of the month, June 30th.
And how can people apply?
MaranaChamber.com. There's a tab for Impact Marana under programs, and they can apply right there. We're pushing out on our social media as well.
Do they have to be a member of the chamber?
They don't have to be a member of the Marana Chamber of Commerce. There is a discount, though, for tuition, and it happens to be the rate of membership, so it would make sense.
Now, what about if somebody outside of Marana wanted to come? They were considering moving business or...
Yeah, there's no limits in that. It's wanting to, you know, be a part of the success of Marana. If that's personally what we've seen, is a lot of regional leaders that have regional impact that actually live in Marana.
Yeah,
and that's been really cool.
There's so many people that don't understand people where they live and where they work, or even who they work for, don't always match.
Exactly. So that was really neat to see.
So we've got a break coming up in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But how many people can you take into the class?
Yeah, so it's 30 would be the max that we can take in.
Perfect.
So
it's a very, you know, you get number. Something too big, then it goes back to that just speaking at you.
Yes, no,
and not with you.
And we're transporting you around on buses and moving you around and getting you in rooms that you never would have been in before.
That's a key part of it. So that sounds like an incredible program. That's Amanda Wiggins, the president and CEO of the Marana Chamber of Commerce. When we return, we'll talk about other issues of importance to both the chamber and to the town of Marana. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk station, and we'll be right back.
And you can see your voice. Go to Facebook, 1030 The Voice. We're on Facebook Live this hour.
Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely is behind the glass, and our guest this morning is Amanda Wiggins, the president and CEO of the Marana Chamber of Commerce. She's probably going, we've been talking for an hour and you still look down before you give my full title. I just don't want to mess things up when I do that. Great pitch on Impact Marana. So you've talked a lot about what you found in Marana, and you obviously have the enthusiasm. You absolutely knew. What are the issues that's of concern to you in the near future for both the Marana Chamber, but also for the town's continued success.
Yeah, and so really the connected leadership was one of those, and that's why Impact Marana is such an important program. So I appreciate the time to get to speak about that and to highlight the application process being open until June 30th. The next component of that, and one of the things that the participants of Impact Marana get to see is, you know, this fast growth, infrastructure is the number one challenge for Marana, from pipes in the ground to the, you know, interchanges. We are so fortunate to have I-10 that goes through our community. It's been, you know, for us, honestly, it was another reason we moved to the community, so that we could easily, my husband, when we moved for his job, he goes down 45 minutes to his job. We got to live where we live. We got to have a great house, school district, neighborhood, everything that we wanted. And he has that convenience. But at the same time, there's a lot of people choosing that as well. So it's utilized, right, a lot, the interstate, the interchanges, and the growth has to, you know, be accommodated with the improvements in the infrastructure. And what I'm grateful for is that Marana leadership knows that and is so aware of it and is working so tirelessly to address those challenges and to be creative and think about some things that can help.
Well, that's a great point too, Amanda. With growth comes opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It comes it comes expansion.
Yep.
But it also creates challenges. And yeah, if you look at the town of Maricopa, or the city of Maricopa up closer to Phoenix,
mm-hmm,
that's State Route 347's a huge nightmare for them right now. Mm-hmm. It's traffic, I mean, hour and a half for them to go what's normally about a 40-minute drive. So that infrastructure is critical. So mm-hmm, what are your thoughts on the RTA?
Yeah, it's been something that our chamber is watching closely. You know, everything that we're seeing is that is the way that the infrastructure gets improved in Marana. You know, that is how is the partnership of the full region. And what I will, you know, if somebody in this region doesn't know the phrase, the Cortero Interchange, I don't know where they've been. I think it doesn't matter where you live or work. You know that is an issue in this region. And that is something that I think we've seen, you know, time and time again come up. So I think very positively about we've got to all do this together. And that's why I have a lot of hope and emphasis in doing it together.
And I think that together is important because it does have a regional impact. There are folks outside of the community,
mm-hmm,
that come and work in Marana.
Exactly.
But there's also a lot of folks who live in Marana, mm-hmm, that leave to work in the city of Tucson. Some even in Sahuarita, you know, or Valley. We've got an economic environment that ebbs and flows and people work throughout. So we've got to remember that regional approach. And the TIs are big investments.
Mm-hmm.
Things people don't understand, we get lots of federal dollars, mm-hmm, to do those. So it's, mm-hmm, not a big investment from the RTA. It is. I mean, it's a big investment from RTA, but it gets multiplied.
Yes.
And everybody does get impacted by that. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the TIs we're working right now under our, you know, there's one down at Valencia, or at all the way down at Valencia Road and I-10 and I-19. Mm-hmm. That's a big project. It's going to have a magnificent impact over, mm-hmm, there. We've seen it with the Twin Peaks interchange. Grant Road underpass is going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing Keen from Country Club, Keno Parkway to Country Club's all getting done. Those are all things that have been supported by RTA and RTA dollars. Mm-hmm. And we forget that. We get bogged down into what's the challenge right now.
Yeah.
And yes, there was a shortfall of funding on the first one, but people have to keep being reminded from all aspects that the regional approach is what's going to make the difference.
Because
jobs and opportunities, I know chambers think this way, jobs and opportunities are solutions to problems.
And I think it's really important, exactly what you said. You know, when my family moved here and chose this community to raise our family, so we shared a little bit. I moved with a 2.5-year-old. Now I have 3 boys, 7, 3, and 8 months.
And it's been incredible watching you continue to be the face of the chamber, and you are engaged. That's an understatement.
I love my life. I love my community.
And it was through two pregnancies, didn't it? You've had some Sometimes you've had three kids with you as you're going around doing and doing it well.
Yeah.
You're not letting anything slow you down.
I do love that. And I love that my boys get to see that. So sometimes Elliot, my oldest, will see the Marana Town logo and he's like, "Mom, that's what you're the boss of." And I'm like, not really, you know, but I appreciate it.
He's got ideas for you.
Wonderful.
We won't let Mayor Post know that.
No. But yeah, he does. He and what I love too is he is connecting that Marana is this place he lives and gets to grow up in and have a lot of pride in, right? So I love that for him. But what you said about all of us being a piece of this puzzle together, absolutely. You know, we moved here from Florida. We knew we wanted to live in this school district, this community. My husband doesn't work inside that, but this is all a piece of our life, right? Like there's no lines in life, right? Like we have to understand that we're connected. And when I talk to my family, you know, they know that I live in Marana because of who I am. But if I wasn't who I was, they would think I live in Tucson, right? This is just a big region that's how they would resonate in Florida. This is where you live, right?
Okay, I'm going to ask a question might get you in trouble or not. So if you are back east or you're somewhere traveling and somebody says, so where are you from?
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah, I do say Marana. I mean, I would say Tucson.
Well done, good answer.
It would depend. That's what I said, who I am, because my family gets to see that I share so much pride in where I live. And I hope everyone does that. But I would say Marana and then Tucson, right? Like this is what ties, connects them to a regional of where they don't really know, right? Just like what I did in Florida, I would say I'm from Ocala. If I saw lights in their eyes, I would say I'm from Dunellen. If I didn't see lights in their eyes, I'd be like, it's near Gainesville. It's
you
a little
got me
near
with Gainesville.
Right? That, you see, it's just all connected,
first
right?
Two I didn't.
Yeah, 45 minutes from Gainesville, 30 minutes from Ocala. Dunellen is where I'm from. So those are just little things, but we're all connected and it all matters so much. So, and what I love and what I said about that creativity is what you were sharing about the way these projects get funded and the pieces and the parts. That has to happen. And it is substantial that everyone comes to the table willing and able.
Well, and it's so important for us all to embrace that. And it's important to me that all the individual chambers, all the different business organizations and the chamber, you know, I just got back from an incredible trip out of the country. Mm-hmm. And anytime I talked, ran into somebody that said, "Where are you from?" It was Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I had said Oro Valley, they'd look at me like I had two horns or something.
Yeah,
you know, they
exactly.
wouldn't have any idea. So it's one of those ones that we need to continue to do that. And it's the chambers and the leaders of those business organizations that make sure we remind everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, we remind the elected officials.
Yeah.
We all impact each other.
We do. The other thing I just want to is that we're living our lives, and it's our neighbors that don't fully understand this, and they're our voters. And that is where I see the biggest opportunity is for all of our community members and our neighbors to just be more educated and more understanding. Everyone has their life they're living, the kids they're moving, the things that they're doing. They don't have time to be like I am. This is my job. This is what I get to do. But I think about with my husband, how would he take this information in to understand and better understand? He hates that interchange, but does he know how it's going to get fixed? And will he be a part of the solution? And that's what I see a biggest opportunity in too. And that's neat to think about and develop program for.
That's Amanda Wiggins, the CEO, president and CEO of the Marana Chamber of Commerce. I love your enthusiasm. I love the way you've embraced this community, how this is your new home.
It
is. You set a great example for other business leaders throughout the community to have that kind of enthusiasm. Thank you for joining us today. We're definitely going to have you back. And
thanks, Ted.
Thanks, Amanda. When we come back, I'll be talking to Chris Cohen from RJP Estate Planning. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and that's Matt Naley, who's selecting and spinning the tunes, The Who. I think they've announced maybe again that they are on their final tour.
Their final farewell tour?
Their final farewell tour of many. Right. So if your assets aren't protected with the estate planning documents you need, you're putting yourselves, your life savings, and your loved ones' financial future at risk. But today, you'll learn five things you can do right now to bulletproof your estate, to ensure you're protected while you're alive, and that everything passes smoothly to the people you love when you're gone. So I want to welcome Chris Cohen to the show with RJP Estate Planning. Thanks, Chris. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. RJP Estate Planning is the oldest and largest estate planning firm in Arizona. RJP's helped more than 40,000 Arizona families over the past 30 years. Chris, people who haven't created an estate plan yet probably know they need to, but it keeps getting pushed down their to-do list. Today, you're going to share five specific things people can do and do now to protect themselves and their families. So let's get right to it.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. At RJP Estate Planning, we've helped over 40,000 Arizona families protect what matters most. And for those who aren't sure where to start, we make that process easy and understandable. Here are five things you can do right now to protect your estate. Step one is to think about who you'd want to manage your finances and your medical care if you ever become incapacitated, whether from an accident, an illness, or the effects of aging. Once you've thought about that, the follow-up is naming your financial and medical powers of attorney. You can name one person for both roles, or choose two different people. Step two is deciding who you want your assets to go to when you pass away. That includes your home, your bank accounts, CDs, retirement accounts like IRAs, everything. If you have children, maybe you want everything split equally, or maybe you want to leave more to one child, or provide for special needs. You can even choose how and when they receive their assets, right away, in monthly payments, or at specific milestones. To do all that, you need a key document called a living trust. A trust allows you to decide who gets what, when, and how. And unlike a will, a living trust can help you avoid probate court. That's important in Arizona, because if you own a home or have more than $75,000 in assets and have only a will, your estate must go through probate, a legal process that could be time-consuming and expensive with probate and legal fees. So to recap, step one, choose your financial and medical power of attorney. Step two, decide who gets your assets and when using a living trust. And stay with us, because in a moment, I'll share a special offer to help you get these important documents created at a deeply discounted rate.
Thanks, Chris. That's already incredibly helpful. So now that our listeners understand the importance of having a living trust and powers of attorney, what's next?
Step three is to schedule a consultation with an estate planning professional. At RJP Estate Planning, we offer a free, no-obligation consultation, often up to an hour or more, where you can ask questions, share your wishes, and find out exactly what you need. If you decide you're not ready yet, that's fine. But I strongly recommend you don't wait too long, because life is unpredictable. Here's step four. Avoid burdening your family with having to settle your estate in probate court. Sadly, hospice nurses often tell us one of the most heartbreaking moments is hearing patients express regret that they never created an estate plan. They're already in physical pain, and now they're suffering emotionally, knowing it's too late. To protect their families from stress, court delays, and legal fees. We all put things off, but this isn't like forgetting to water your plants. If you don't protect your assets in Arizona, the people you love may have to endure months or even years of court hearings, legal fees, and uncertainty, all during a time when they're grieving from losing you. The good news is, if you start today, you could have your entire estate plan completed within 4 to 6 weeks, and you and your family could finally have peace of mind.
Chris, that's such a powerful point. Having an estate plan doesn't just give us peace of mind as parents. It also gives our children reassurance and comfort during a very emotional time. So once a listener has had their fee consultation and decides to move forward, what's that final step?
Yeah, step five is finalizing and sharing your plan. Once your documents are completed, you'll receive a physical binder and a digital flash drive with your full estate plan. And as an RJP client, you'll also receive free annual reviews, legal updates, and free settlement support for your family when the time comes. That means when you pass, your family can call us, and we'll personally guide them through the process to ensure your assets are legally passed on quickly, privately, and correctly. I also recommend spending 15 to 20 minutes sharing the key details of your plan with the people involved, your powers of attorney, your beneficiaries who will be inheriting your assets, and anyone else named in your trust. You can give each person a copy of your plan on a flash drive and let them know where you've stored your estate planning binder. And most importantly, RJP's phone number will be listed in your plan to make it easy for your family to contact us for that free settlement support when the time comes. We'll guide them through the entire process of how to get their inheritance.
That's excellent advice, Chris, especially the sharing with your family and those people involved in your estate planning. So if you're healthy, this is the perfect time to protect yourself and your family's financial future. Chris, you mentioned our listeners can get everything they need at a discounted price.
Yes, thanks again for having me, Ted. Here's RJP's offer. If you're 60 or over, schedule a free consultation before June 26th, and you'll receive a 65% discount on your living trust. Plus, you'll get a living will and your financial medical power of attorney documents at no extra charge. Call RJP Estate Planning now at 520-441-4523. Schedule your free consultation before June 26th to lock in your 65% savings. Call 520-441-4523.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks to everyone listening. If you've been putting off your estate plan, now's the time to protect your assets, your wishes, and the people you love. Call RJP Estate Planning today at 520-441-4523 to schedule your free consultation and take advantage of that limited time 65% savings if you're 60 or over. Call before June 26th to take advantage of RJP's special offer. Again, call 520-441-4523. Chris, I appreciate you joining us on the show today, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks, Ted.
All right. Have a great day, Chris.
I know.
Well, Matt, pretty good show today. I think we kept it busy.
Welcome back, Ted.
Oh, it's good to be back. This will become one of the highlights of my week every Tuesday, is coming in, spending time with the listeners on The Morning Voice. Remember, five different hosts, five different shows, 5 days of the week. And we'll talk to you next week.
When Tucson is next.